Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, January 23rd, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Lawyers representing settlers at a farm in Zimbabwe's Mashonaland Central Province being converted into a game park by First Lady Grace Mugabe have filed papers at the High Court to force government to remove within 48 hours about 100 zebras released into the farm this week.
In the interim, we want a temporary relief that these animals be removed from this area within 48 hours of service of the court order.
At least 15 civil society organizations are allegedly under investigation by the United States government for misuse and misappropriation of donor funds.
And Zimbabweans living in South Africa say they are now living in fear following a new spate of xenophobic attacks aimed at foreign-owned businesses.
Lawyers representing settlers at Arnold Farm, also known as Manzou in Mazoe, have filed papers at the High Court to force government to remove within 48 hours about 100 zebras released into the farm to pave way for its eventual takeover by First Lady Grace Mugabe, who plans to turn it into a wildlife sanctuary. A conservation expert has put the figure to turn the agriculture farm into a game park at around $10 million. The cash-strapped government has declined to comment on who will foot the bill. But sources say the Zimbabwe Parks and Wildlife and Management Authority, or ZIMPARKS, has been directed to fund the project. High Court Judge Erica Ndewere on Monday last week granted a provisional order halting the eviction of more than 200 families at the farm without offering them alternative land with offer letters. The villagers who talked to Studio 7 today said the zebras are eating their crops and police who have camped at the farm are stopping them from erecting temporary structures or toilets, posing a serious health risk to settlers.
Reached for comment, ZIMPARKS spokesperson Caroline Washayamoyo told Studio 7 that she was driving and referred us to her boss, Godfrey Matipano. Matipano did not pick his phone despite repeated attempts to reach him. Mashonaland Central Provincial Affairs Minister Martin Dina, who confirmed that Ms. Mugabe has applied for a license to run the farm, said he had a personal engagement and was not immediately available. Attorney Tonderai Batasara, a member of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that two government ministries and ZIMPARKS are in contempt of court.
This morning, we filed an urgent chamber application against the Minister of Home Affairs, the Minister of Lands and Rural Resettlement, the Minister of Environment, Climate and Water, and the Parks and Wildlife Management Authority, and then the trustees of the National Monument and Museums, who are the parties that are involved.
What relief are you seeking from the courts?
In the interim, we want a temporary relief that these animals be removed from this area within 48 hours of service of the court order. And then the final order that we want is a declaration that this act of bringing animals onto a place which is not a conservancy, a sanctuary or an area for animals, violated the rights of our clients against arbitrary eviction. And it was a circumvention of the court orders that are in existence that prohibited these respondents from evicting these people. So they decided to use animals to basically evict our clients.
That was lawyer Tonderai Batasara, a member lawyer of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, who is representing the villagers, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. But chairman of the Zimbabwe Conservance Task Force, John Rodriguez, told Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that turning Manzou Farm into a game park to accommodate the big five, lion, elephant, buffalo, leopard and rhinoceros species is a multi-million dollar venture.
You have to have a 16-strand of wire as a game fence, and you need double of it, two of them, with a space between each fence of two, minimum of 2 meters, but up to 3 meters, because animals, the wild animals, actually pass diseases to your domesticated animals, you know, like a cattle, and this is where your foot and mouth is actually spread. And to actually, you know, it's a big commercial farming area. You know, it's one of the best areas to grow crops. And for the first lady to turn it into a so-called conservancy, it doesn't make sense, because she says the money that is raised will go into the orphanage. Now, that's very incredible, because why the big five? Because, you know, it's one of the things that is sorted by most of the wealthy people around the world who pay a premium to actually come and shoot these animals. But the issue that they haven't actually taken a good look at is that you can't keep leopards behind a fence. That's the first thing. Second thing, elephants will tear those fences down. It makes no difference. If it's not the habitat and they don't relocate them from more than 200 kilometers, they will break and go back to where they come from.
Lastly, can you make a rough estimate of how much it might cost to turn that farm into a conservancy?
Hey, it could be anything between $5 and $10 million.
Chairman of the Zimbabwe Conservance Task Force, Johnny Rodriguez, on the line from Harare with Blessing Zulu.
At least 15 civil society organizations are allegedly under investigation by the United States government for misuse and misappropriation of donor funds. Online publication NewZimbabwe.com reports that the funds donated through the United States fund distributor, the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, and disbursed to some organization dealing with elections and peace-building initiatives are under investigation. Studio 7 was unable to get confirmation of an investigation from officials with the United States Embassy in Harare, who said they were looking into the article and those named to be included in the investigations.
There was a conflict in the Crisis in Zimbabwe coalition late last year, with former board chairperson Dewama Vinga maintaining the lobby group's decision not to renew the contract of its then-director McDonald Lewanika. Mavinga then resigned from his position, citing deep mistrust and wrangling that he said had become untenable for effective leadership. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to human rights lawyer and Reagan Fossil Democracy Fellow Arthur Gwagwa, researching transparency within civil organizations. Gwagwa says in countries facing transitional democracy, there is always need for structured presence for both CSOs and donor funders.
The other issue that we need to look at is that most organizations that, you know, promote, you know, democracy and human rights in times of crisis or transition are crisis-driven. In other words, you know, they respond, you know, to the crisis as it evolves. So the organizations don't have the time, or the people who run the organization don't really have the time, you know, sit back, relax, and look at their organizations in order for them to build, you know, durable structures that are strong enough, that are accountable and transparent. Well, that is not to say that, you know, the organizations in Zimbabwe are not transparent or accountable. What I'm simply saying is, I think for some of the organizations that are formed, you know, during, you know, times of crisis, they are crisis-driven and do not really have, you know, strong structure to address some of these issues.
As you're pointing out under that aspect, in your view, what should CSOs do to make sure that these structures are there and they're properly implemented, to make sure that there are no issues when it comes to the either-or lack of transparency, corruption?
You know, there's no panacea, or maybe what I could say, you know, this is the solution to the problem. But they are generally agreed rules and, regulations. For example, there's what we call, corporate governance, principles. Most, developed countries, they have, corporate governance principles that even NGOs, to a certain extent, should adhere to. Zimbabwe last year, the Zimbabwe Chamber of Commerce adopted, corporate governance principles. Although CSOs are not part of the Zimbabwe Chamber of Commerce, but they can learn from some of those, corporate governance principles.
Human rights lawyer and Reagan Fasel Democracy Fellow Arthur Gwagwa on the line in Washington, D.C.
Zimbabweans living in South Africa say they are now living in fear following a new spate of xenophobic attacks aimed at foreign-owned businesses. Several shops owned by foreigners have been subjected to looting and ransacking by mobs who allude their action to the killings of a South African young man that was shot dead by a Somali businessman. The young man was allegedly trying to rob the Somalian's shop. The ensuing looting that started Monday left three people dead and more than 180 arrested, and goods including groceries and electrical appliances like fridges worth thousands of rands were recovered. Some Zimbabweans say they've moved away from hotspots like Soweto as they fear the attacks. However, spokesman Ngabuto Nicholas Mabena of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa tells Studio 7 Zimbabweans are surviving the onslaught because they are not easily identifiable as foreigners in South Africa because of similarities in language and other traits, unlike fellow Africans from North Africa who are distinguishable by appearance and language.
The biggest challenge that South Africa has is that foreign nationals have basically driven South Africans out of small businesses in their localities. You have seen a number of Ethiopians and the Pakistanians moving into Soweto, into Alexandra and the other areas, driving South Africans out, not violently, but in terms of their prices that they charge. For instance, if a South African were to have a grocery shop, they sell, say, a toilet paper for about 7 rand. An Ethiopian will sell that same toilet paper for 3 rand.
In all this mayhem, how are Zimbabweans coping?
It is not easy to separate a Zimbabwean from a South African because Zimbabweans, by their nature, they speak local languages. They speak isiZulu, Swana, Soto, Xhosa, and other languages spoken in South Africa. In terms of complexion, they are basically the same. So you can't tell a Zimbabwean in a crowd when they are with the South Africans, but it's easier to say this one is from Ethiopia or this one is from Pakistan.
Ngabuto Nicholas Mabena is the spokesman of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Johannesburg.
President Robert Mugabe's return from vacation has many people anxiously waiting for the next episode in the ongoing ZANU-PF political series, often punctuated by intrigue, dramatic turns, and downright comedy. On arrival yesterday at the Harare International Airport, President Mugabe immediately laid into his former ally Didmus Mutasa, calling him a baying donkey. This after Mr. Mutasa criticized the page of ZANU-PF members accused of working with former Vice President Joyce Mujuru and called for their reinstatement. Observers say Mr. Mutasa and more perceived Mujuru allies will sure be expelled from the party. Analyst Chamnor Wamadiridze says the infighting in ZANU-PF will continue, with the ruling party paying less attention on national issues.
These squabbles are likely to continue. They are not going to ease at any moment to come. But let me say that his return, especially following the statement that was released by Mutasa in the previous weeks, is likely to see another dismissal of party members and even from government of other people who were aligned to Mamjuru and who are still believed to be fighting President Robert Mugabe. But from my own look of things, Ramaphosa is determined to take him head on, and this is shown in the statement that the former Secretary of Administration for ZANU-PF released. Nevertheless, we need to be realistic, because taking a rough look at ZANU-PF party politics, it's easy to tell that the power is with Mugabe. And realistically speaking, the one with power is the one who wins in the game of politics.
On the national agenda, any hope for the economy?
Well, it's very easy to tell, Mr. Ngomo. The return of the president, I'm sure, is most welcome. He has come at a moment when the people and the state of affairs in the country requires him most. The situation in the party, the ZANU-PF party, is in dire need of his intervention, let alone the economy of the country. The only worrying thing is that the old man is as he was in the previous years. He is blank, and he is of no clue of how he can turn around the economy and ensure political order as well as political certainty.
A political analyst, Chamnoro Madiri, there on the line from South Africa. Ntungamili Nkomo also reached another analyst, Dumisani Nkomo.
I don't think we're likely to see anything new besides an increase in the hate speech. But in terms of the national agenda, really, I think we're unlikely to see any major shift or any major difference, because there doesn't seem to be any commitment from the government to its own Azim Asset document and vision blueprint. We seek to win also the confidence of investors and to mobilize local resources. Instead, there's just been a focus on internal politics and factionalism. So there's been a lack of that direction, a lack of that vision, especially in the light of the economic situation, the unemployment, and the fact that the whole nation is virtually in debt.
Any hope for the ailing economy?
That's a problem, that they've dropped the ball. They're no longer concentrating on their own economic blueprint. They're no longer concentrating on creating jobs. They're no longer concentrating on restoring the economy. They're no longer concentrating on restoring service delivery from the for the ordinary people. So there has been a shift, and a very serious shift from the national agenda.
Political analyst Dumisani Nkomo in Bulawayo.
Meanwhile, news just reaching us is that President Robert Mugabe left Harare for Zambia today for the inauguration of the Zambian president tomorrow, who is not yet known, State Radio reported. However, the Zambian Electoral Commission told Studio 7 the counting of votes has not been completed, meaning there's no winner yet. An electoral official said it was possible the result may not even be known tomorrow. The Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation says Mr. Mugabe, who arrived in the country yesterday from a month-long vacation, left in the company of Foreign Affairs Minister Simbarashe Mbengegui. Studio 7 was unable to get government comment on Mr. Mugabe's surprise trip to Zambia.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
a closer look at Zimbabwe's disappearance from international discussions on nations are facing various problems.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Saudi Arabia's new king, Salman, is pledging to continue the policies of his half-brother, the late King Abdullah, who was buried today in the capital, Riyadh. King Abdullah, who died earlier today, was laid to rest in an unmarked grave following a simple ceremony attended by the Arab and Muslim world's top leaders.
The latest results from Zambia's presidential election show ruling party candidate Edgar Lungu holding on to a slim but narrowing lead. The Electoral Commission of Zambia today said that Lungu, the Patriotic Front candidate, at just under 49% of the vote, his closest rival, Akainde Ichilema of the United Party for National Development, at just under 47%.
And the Democratic Republic of Congo Senate has revised an electoral bill that triggered violent protests in which at least a dozen people were killed. Opponents said an earlier version of the bill passed by the lower house of parliament would allow President Joseph Kabila to stay in power for years by postponing elections until a national census was completed.
The government today finally paid remaining civil servants their 2014 bonuses, which were given to workers in phases due to financial constraints. Public Service Association President Cecilia Alexander says the unions have started receiving information from their members that their bonuses have been processed. This week, the government failed to pay teachers on the 20th and pushed the salary payments to Tuesday next week, meaning that other civil servants will be affected by this move. Alexander says they appreciate the move by the government to finally pay them, adding they hope in the future it will put its workers first.
We just received a report that the rest of the civil service received their bonus today, which is the 23rd of January. And let me say that we are very grateful and we appreciate the fact that the Minister of Public Service, Labour and Social Welfare, in our meeting last week, promised that we were going to receive our bonuses today, and that has been fulfilled.
There are complaints from some quarters of civil servants that they are always the last to get paid whenever there are some changes. What are you doing about this?
It is true, especially the rest of the civil service where I lead. It seems when there are problems, they are always sacrificed. They are thought of at a later stage. We believe that if this country is going through problems, then these problems should be shared. We believe we are also important, and we are also civil servants, just like those ministries that they are prioritizing. So the rest of this civil service is actually raising a concern that next time when we have problems, I think they should also be prioritized.
That was Public Service Association President Cecilia Alexander in Harare.
Many have noted the absence of Zimbabwe on discussions relating to countries in crisis. Following its election victory in 2013, which officially ended the government of national unity between ZANU-PF and the opposition MDC, many say the appearance of peace in the country has averted the world attention to areas of more open conflict around the continent and the world. Jeffrey Smith of Robert F. Kennedy Center of Justice and Human Rights adds that President Robert Mugabe has managed to create the impression that Zimbabwe is a law-abiding country by utilizing the threat of legal court actions as a means of silencing dissent. Smith tells Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalele that Zimbabwe is not a center of concern for the U.S. at present.
Mugabe, including many other leaders in the region, they don't use baton-wielding security forces and police and the military to quash civil disobedience or dissent anymore. So you don't see civic activists being beaten in the streets or hearing of their abductions, like Justina Mokoko, when Beatrice Mtetwa was beaten and tortured. What they do now is they monopolize the courts instead of violence to maintain control, and that is not going to get the same headlines, certainly not the same international headlines, as overt physical violence and brute force often does. So Mugabe's learned that you use the courts, laws, and pieces of legislation to stifle civic activism, to stifle the political opposition, and maintain power. And there's very, very little international criticism because it's done under the guise of the rule of law.
But now, obviously, that is a known tactic. And some are wondering, where is the international community at this point to counter this tactic?
I think there are a number of different layers there. I think the first layer is elements within the political opposition, which have sort of discredited themselves over the past several years. And within civil society, I think they have to take a hard look at themselves, what they're not doing right, where they could learn to do better. Certainly, I understand the fact that it's a very, very repressive environment. But I think right now, civil society is suffering from a collective malaise where they really haven't galvanized themselves after August 2013 when the election results were announced. Secondly, I think it's a responsibility of the Southern African development community. For instance, they have to hold themselves up to their own lofty standards of which they've agreed to. For instance, the SADC guidelines and principles governing democratic elections.
What is the possibility that also the attention on Zimbabwe has been withdrawn because there is somewhat of what could be considered, even though it's arguable, a legitimate government in place? They won the elections in 2013.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. You know, I honestly would say that I think during the last elections, for sure, ZANU-PF as opposed to the MDCs, was better organized. They had better grassroots networks. They really went out there and campaigned. You know, I was there in March of 2013, and everywhere you went, you saw ZANU posters, you saw people canvassing. I think that the opposition, particularly the MDCT at the time, took it as a foregone conclusion that they were going to win. You know, I remember talking to Morgan Tsvangirai, and he was convinced that the MDCT was going to win. There was no doubt in his mind. But to unseat, as you said, a liberation party that's been in power for 35 years, it's not an easy feat. They came close several times, and I think 2008 or elections prior, clearly the vote was stolen. But I think even with a free and fair playing ground, ZANU-PF in 2013 may very well have won that election.
Now, does that put organizations that are trying to help civil society groups and push the democratization movement in a dilemma?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are two separate issues. I think, obviously, the opposition parties need to get their own houses in order, and civil society needs to get their own houses in order, too. And I think they've been dependent on each other, oftentimes. Right, and rightly, criticism is that they've been too close, and oftentimes they've been conflated. You see many people moving back and forth between MDC leadership and leadership within civil society. And obviously, you're going to see that in a lot of different countries where civil society becomes the opposition because the political opposition has been annihilated. But there still is that problem of conflating the two, and I think there needs to be a much more clear line that delineates the two.
Some say, well, that's the Western donors. They put sometimes the opposition and the civil society in the same pot because the mission is the same.
Yeah.
Democratization.
Absolutely. I think we can lay a lot of blame at the feet of civil society, but we can also lay a lot of blame at the feet of international donors and international implementers, for sure. You know, certainly it's not made out to be, you know, the machinery of regime change that Mugabe likes to so often hurl at the West and civil society and the opposition. It's not even close to being as coordinated and as, you know, a monolithic force as ZANU-PF likes to portray as this threat from the outside. It's not.
And that was Advocate Officer Jeffrey Smith of the Robert F. Kennedy Center for Justice and Human Rights speaking with Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalielie right here in Washington, D.C.
The ZANU-PF Bulawayo province says Vice President Pelekezela Mpoko will conduct a series of meetings in Bulawayo to interact with people and party members this weekend following his appointment to the top national position of Vice President by President Mugabe last year. ZANU-PF Central Committee member Joseph Chuma, who will be part of the Vice President's delegation, tells reporter Standigile Mhlanga the Vice President will also interact with party structures in the city.
And he is one leader who likes to mingle with the grassroots more than even the top leadership of the party. So he wants to go down to the people, the grassroots, and hear it straight from the people so that we then make ways forward from there when he has talked to the people and heard what their problems, their afflictions are, and then we can take decisions and decide on the way of how to handle the province and the party at large, but coming straight from the people and not from the top leadership of the party.
We've also seen the vice president visiting bereaved families in Kezi and Cholocho. What type of person can you say he is, and what can people expect from his leadership?
He is a very humble, down-to-earth person. He is very sociable, he's approachable, he has a caring heart just like the president himself. The one thing that I like about him is that he emulates so much the president. If you have noticed how the president is so compassionate, full of passion for the people that he leads, the people that had an accident in Botswana, the VP has gone in there to actually try and help from his own resources, not even from the government resources, but from his own company's resources. So he's an all-weather VP, and I think with that kind of approach, we are bound to succeed, definitely. Bulawayo is going to come back alive. Bulawayo is going to be restored back to his glory and such kind of leadership.
That was ZANU-PF Central Committee member Joseph Chuma on the line from Bulawayo.
And please remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the ongoing African Cup of Nations in Equatorial Guinea. And in a game just played, Ghana 1, Algeria 0. That's all for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.